It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is Monday, April 27th, 2026, and you know what that means. It's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 376 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. I am Lom, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I'm joined by my comrade in gaming commentary, the Miggity 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 Mac, also known as Mac Shint Mac. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well, Mr. Nice Guy. I've had an eventful week since we were together last.
Tell me more.
Yeah, I had some visitors over, specifically my parents.
Nice.
They came out to the coast. We had a few laughs. And it was a good time. You know, we went to some of my favorite places. We relaxed. We had some good food. And, you know, Nice Guy, I think this most recent visit really reaffirms my personal preference for vacationing.
What do you mean?
In any vacation, I think you need to strike the balance of doing something, but also not doing things.
I agree.
But I think the perfect thing is to plan less than three things to do each day.
Each day?
You should err toward one to two things, but you should plan for no more than three things to do on any given day of a vacation, just so that, like, you enjoy the passage of time while you're on vacation. You start going past three, and it's just like, you know what? No. But, you know, go for a hike. That's one. Go frisbee golfing. That's two. Catch a movie. That's three.
Boom. There you go.
Everything else, you just sort of let it go. If you don't, like, let it breathe, you know, then is it really vacation?
That's true. And I would agree. And I think that was the perfect segue, because you know that I took a short solo vacation this past weekend, which mm-hmm. is something I try to do at least annually, is go to a city, spend a couple nights there, do three things a day, and then come home, Mac. So the highlights, went to St. Nice. Louis this weekend. It was like a 5.5 mm-hmm. hour drive, did a straight shot. What did I do? So played a round of golf at a par three course. That was nice. Awesome and very, very relaxing. Went to the Seattle Mariners versus the Cardinals game. That was probably the highlight. Mac, I know your sports aren't your thing, but Busch Stadium, absolutely beautiful. The people of St. Louis, absolutely awesome to sit with. Even as I'm, like, in a self-aware way, cheering for the other team. Like, we had some great conversation. We had some great banter. They cheered for their team. I cheered for my team. We chopped it up. We had some conversation, right? We're all reasonable people. And it was fun.
The one real sad thing about that trip.
What's that?
The Cardinals weren't playing somebody like the Blue Jays, because then you would have had two birds in the bush.
That's true, Mac. It's a terrible, terrible joke, dude. Terrible, terrible joke. We should clip that and put it on TikTok. No, that's actually a really good joke. I like it.
Thanks. You can use it if you like.
I will not. You. I will not. But I think it was well.
Oh, it wouldn't work perfect in your next stand-up set?
I think you could use that. I'll let you keep that one.
Okay, I'll use it for my next special.
Yeah, there we go. A couple other things, dude. Went to go see Ron Funches at the Helium Comedy Club.
Oh, that's right. Ron Funches.
And that was super fun, man. There's always like a certain amount of, I don't want to call it arrogance, but confidence as a comic watching other comics and watching the openers. They were great, but thinking, I could do a little, like if I had the mic right now, I think I could do a little better. But no, they were good. That was fun. I did the tactical laser tag thing. They have a great iCombat location down there in O'Fallon. Played terribly. Had an absolute blast. Threw caution to the wind and said, I don't care about my numbers right now. We're just going to play the objective and we're going to have some fun. And had an absolute blast. Met some awesome people down there. It was great.
I'm sorry that the rest of the team did not support you the way you should have been supported. You were playing to the objective. They were not backing you up. I'm sorry that your KD ratio suffered as a result, but that's a them problem.
It was a them problem. We lost almost every game, but I had a blast. And last thing I got to share, Mac, went to the Stellar Hog barbecue. Supposedly the best barbecue in St. Louis.
Oh.
I think it is. It's one of the rare times where I ate barbecue that was not mine and I was not angry. I actually said these ribs might be better than mine. It was absolutely phenomenal. If you're ever in St. Louis, get some ribs, get some meat at the Stellar Hog. Loved it. It was great.
Dude, I have just the quickest St. Louis story.
Tell it.
Ages and ages ago, everybody else in the traveling team for this scrapbooking company had the flu, and I knew a person, and so anyway, I got tapped to go along and to sell scrapbooking stuff at a scrapbooking convention in St. Louis. Never mind, I didn't know anything about scrapbooking. That's not the point. I was there to be a body in the booth and to, like, you know, take info and run cards and, you know, things like that. And while we were there in St. Louis, I went and got the most incredible frozen custard.
Was it from Andy's?
No, it was from a place called Ted Drew's.
Oh, okay.
I want to say with the name of the place. Anyway, it was incredible. I got this amazing thing. They called it the Big Apple. It was vanilla frozen custard, and they blended a piece of hot apple pie into it.
Nice. Very St. Louis.
It was divine. And I from then on, I'd always been like, yeah, ice cream is good, but frozen custard, that is where it is at. So anyway, love St. Louis.
It's a phenomenal city.
So glad you had a good time, man.
Yeah, I had Andy's custard while I was out there. It was really good.
Nice.
With gooey butter cake in it, Mac.
Oh, you're right. This is a St. Louis thing.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, we could talk about this all day. But I say we do what we do best, and we hop right up in that gaming news, Mac. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Mr. Nice Guy, I'm so far out of the loop. What is new in Vidyagaming?
Dude, there's so much, and there's so much that I'm excited to talk about. So let's dive in. This is episode 376 of Two Nerds in a Pod, Nerdiest Video Game Podcast in the Galaxy. Thank you so much for tuning in. Those of you who are here live, and more importantly, all of you who are here after the fact, we appreciate each and every one of you and your ears. Mac, this first story comes from Polygon.com, written by Michael McWhirter. Here is what Michael writes. On Tuesday, by the way, this was written on the 21st. News often comes out day after we record.
Always.
On Tuesday, Microsoft reversed course on its 50% price hike on Xbox Game Pass Ultimate it instituted just 6 months ago. Under new Microsoft Gaming CEO Asha Sharma, the company has slashed the price of its top-tier Game Pass subscription from $29.99 to $22.99 per month. Subscribers are losing day-one access to Call of Duty games going forward, but that cost-cutting measure looks like the right move. Xbox tested its most loyal customers' breaking point, and it appears that $30 a month for Game Pass finally broke them. Mac, I'm not going to read the quotes. There's quotes where the CEO is saying Game Pass has become too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I want us to have a quick conversation about this price drop in relation to the hardware bumps in price that we've seen lately.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do you think Microsoft is taking a different course in response to their customers, where others are bumping prices and attributing it to global conditions, to RAM? I have some thoughts here, but I want to hear your opinion.
It's a lot harder to claim that software is being that impacted by hardware issues. I'm uncompelled by, oh, the price of hardware went up, so the price of already existing software needs to go up as well. Now, I mean, we could talk about, oh, well, we had to buy all this new hardware to make the new game coming out. And I mean, I still think that that's a bit of a stretch.
Sure.
But, you know, I don't think that that a hardware and a software thing necessarily have to move in the same direction, just straight up. But I also wonder, I believe the way that it was phrased in that article was that this reversed a price increase.
100%.
Was it a reversal of the complete amount of the bump, or is this that's gone down a little bit? Because I don't remember how much Game Pass was before they bumped it to nearly 30.
Yeah, I don't remember either. And if anyone knows in the chat, please let us know. But I'm pretty sure this is simply a reverse of the price.
Yeah, so I think the only other thing that I would mention about it, my understanding was that a lot of the justification that they expressed for why they were going to increase Game Pass pricing in the first place was to have Call of Duty there on day one.
100%.
And so it sounds like they are being relatively honest about, you know, we increased your prices because you all wanted you know, we wanted to give you Call of Duty day one, and now you're not getting that, so we'll put it back to where it was before. I mean, perhaps they've realized that Call of Duty day one on Game Pass was a net loss for them and wanted to walk that back, but not, like, keep hanging on to people's money. I feel like if that's what their goal was, then that was the way to do it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair. And shout out to our good friend and longtime listener, Galvatron Type R, in the chat. G writes, $23 is still $3 more than the previous price, which was 20, he says in parentheses. They won't stay at 23 for long. It will get hiked again likely next year. We'll see. He also argues, Mac, he says, Microsoft gambled that customer anger would be offset by quote-unquote free Call of Duty. They were wrong. People canceled in droves. Plus, they lost millions in COD sales. So they compromised by cutting the price and taking away COD. I think that's a fair analysis, and that's kind of what Maxion was saying. Here's where I'm confused about Microsoft's move. Now, granted, yes, it's $3 more than it was originally. Mm-hmm. You bumped it up, and then you acted like you're giving something back to get some goodwill from the gamers. I get that. Microsoft had to pay a lot of money to acquire some of these studios that are making up some of the most popular games on Game Pass. Now, granted, Call of Duty no longer going to be on Game Pass, but still something that they now own. And so they're still going to get profit from the sales. But think about Bethesda. Think about others. To me, going back in price means that they forecasted and said, it's going to take us longer to recoup the cost of acquiring all these studios, but we're willing to do that for whatever reason. That's a weird move to me in a time when everything is going up in price. I don't disagree with it. I'm happy. I just think it's a very weird move at this time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel that when I see somebody that makes, when I see a company like Microsoft that makes a move that I as a consumer think is a good thing, I immediately get suspicious.
Yeah.
For related reasons to you, Mr. Nice Guy. So it's very weird. We'll have to keep our eyes on it.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Well, hey, let's move on to another news story, because we have more stuff about Xbox that's super interesting to me. As we have new leadership, now that, you know, Phil Spencer and others are no longer leading Xbox, there was this story that came out recently on Xbox Newswire from the 23rd, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, Mac, but to summarize it, they're effectively trying to rebrand the Xbox. Let's read a little bit of it. It says, "Dear team, Xbox has always been different. We started with a simple idea. Games should bring people together through shared experiences. That led to the first Xbox in 2001, Xbox Live in 2002, and new ways to connect, from friends, lists, and achievements to parties and play across devices. Today, Xbox reaches over 500 million players around the world with some of the most important franchises in entertainment." It goes on to say people are frustrated. And then they talk about how they want to rebrand as the industry changes and reshapes around us, they say. Here are some of the things that they say they're going to do, Mac, to get Xbox back to being the best place to play. Stabilize Gen 9, which I believe means Generation 9 of consoles, right, of hardware, as a healthy and high-quality base. Deliver Project Helix, which is the new Xbox, to lead in performance in player, console, and PC games. Lead in comfortable, personal, high-performance accessories. Build a strong ecosystem that expands choice and reach. In terms of content, grow and extend an enduring portfolio of franchises players love. Explore our 3P partnerships and strengthen our 5-year slate. Expand into China, emerging markets, and mobile-first devices. And then, I mean, it goes on and on and on, man. It says fortify Game Pass with clear differentiation and sustainable economics. Use M&A, which merger and acquisitions, deliberately to accelerate growth where organic paths are too slow.
Where organic paths are too slow.
That's a big
interesting
one. Yeah, and I thought you might have opinions on some of this, Mac, as we've talked about this stuff before. You know, what are your thoughts on that? But more importantly, like, what do you think Xbox or anyone could do to make their platforms the place to be over others?
Wow. Dude, you are asking me to turn over the keys to the kingdom to tell them how to do it, the path forward, something that I, Mac, am uniquely qualified to do? I shan't.
You had an OG Xbox, right?
I did. I loved that thing. You know, I think one of the things I really appreciated about the original Xbox was that it really, while it was a console, it was really a lot more like a computer. And I did really appreciate most of all that by modding the Xbox, I wound up being able to give it new life for many years to come as both an emulation station, a media server, as well as, as well as an Xbox itself. I liked how it was very convenient to basically have all the conveniences of a computer hooked up to my television. And frankly, I'd like to see some more of that out of Xbox.
So it's interesting you say that, because with the Steam box and the new Xbox.
Indeed.
Box. Mm-hmm. It's going to be that way again. Like, you know, I'm not paying $1,500. You know, for one of those things. That's absolutely absurd. But if they can make these things at a price point that is obtainable, you know, to reasonable people, regardless of where you're at, like, who's spending $1,500? Mm-hmm. You know, that's wild. Well,
nice guy. To that end, let me pitch it to you. Affordability, big thing, you know, for
sure,
all these.
Sure.
The Xbox Series S and Series X, I believe, if I'm reading this Wikipedia page correctly, I believe they launched at in the U.S. at least at $299 and $499 respectively.
Yep.
You know, increased in price with the various options going for $399, $499 for the S and $599. $649 and $799 for various iterations of the question for you, nice guy. If you're going to buy this Project Helix thing,
sure,
that they say that they're going to push out, or the Steam box, the Valve box, what have you, what's the right price point for Mr. Nice Guy, for the nice household?
That's a really good question. So keeping in mind that the Valve Index was $1,000. And it's very much a niche product, right? Without the same functionality as this upcoming Steam PC.
Yeah.
Keeping in mind that I'm trying to remember how much the Steam Deck was. I think it was four or five, maybe. I can't remember. I have the 512. Point being, it's going to be like, I feel like they would charge $1,000 for this PC.
Mm-hmm.
My price point in my mind would be more like $799. Right, $899 tops for me to buy that. And granted, I have the Steam Deck. What is this thing going to do that I could not do with a Steam Deck dock? Right?
I mean, ideally, it would have some better processing hardware and some better, some better video card and such for that kind of price. But that would put it on tier with, you know, what the 2 terabyte Xbox Series X was. Or at least currently, what is
right,
currently
with the price bump
for those.
Well, G summarized my thoughts in the chat pretty well about what Microsoft needs to do. And the bottom line is, I don't think that they can make Xbox be the place to play anymore.
Really? Just period. That ship has sailed?
I don't. And I think that it's a nostalgia thing.
Okay.
I think they caught lightning in a bottle with Halo, and then online play when it was much more new. Made it really the place to play at a time when couch co-op was maybe not as feasible as people were getting a little bit older. Online play came in right at the right time. Go ahead, Mac.
You know, and to your point, I think you're definitely hitting on probably the lion's share of it, but I feel like when we had the early, especially the 360, and we had the
Xbox Live.
Yeah, we had Xbox Live Arcade.
Yes.
Particularly with the indie game surge that we got. Yeah, the indie game explosion that we got thanks to those doors being opened wide in a way that they just didn't feel like, for all the things I like to say about the Steam platform. I just didn't feel like indie games really found their stride until we got Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah, I think you're right. And now, very much in a saturated indie environment, so harder to go back to that era. If I was going to summarize this in a sentence, Xbox had a really good run in the first two generations of its existence because it came out at the right time. And it filled a need that is no longer as scarce as it used to be. that has been our news for the week.
Thank you, Nice Guy, for showing us what's going on right now. I want to take us into the past with some amazing things that came out this last week or so in video game history. Nice Guy, I've got a couple of good ones, stuff that means a lot to me and to you, I suspect. We'll go back in time to 1955, a game released for the PC called Full Throttle. So for starters, I think it was one of the last point and click adventure games that were really put out there. It was done by LucasArts, one of the later games in the genre produced by LucasArts, and I have to say that I felt like it perfected the interface for point and click games.
Okay.
Have you played Full Throttle?
That's not one of mine, but I'm excited to hear you talk about it, man. It sounds great.
So fantastic. You are Ben, the main character Ben. You are the leader of a biker gang. And you have, among other things, you know, you're going around. Some people have double-crossed you. You're trying to make sure that things are... There's all these other rival biker gangs around. But one thing that I love so much is how the art very much informed the interface. Mm. So, like, the biker gang you're the leader of, the Polecats, has, like, a patch. You know, like, you'd have that patch on your leather jacket.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And so when you go to interact with something, you know, you might be familiar with a point-and-click adventure game with, like, all those verbs on the bottom. You would, like, click, okay, pick up, and then you would click on whatever you wanted to pick up. You
right.
know? And it had been that way for just ages. But this one, you went ahead and you clicked on something, and by clicking on it, it would bring up the patch, which included, like, a skull. So you had... You know, your mouth if you wanted to talk to people, the eyes if you wanted to look at someone.
Ah.
It also had a hand as well as a foot. So, like, if you wanted to kick something, like kick a door down, you'd click on the door and then the patch would come up and you'd just move to the,
interesting,
you know, to the foot and you'd kick open the door. And all those sorts of, like fun things that went on in the game. I just loved it. I thought it was a masterclass in, you know, blending the functional and the artistic in the game. And I know they did a remaster some years back that I've also played and is good, but it always holds a special place in my heart. If you're at all intrigued by the point-and-click adventure genre, cannot recommend Full Throttle enough. And, of course, splendid voice acting by everybody involved, fully voiced. Mark Hamill plays one of the main baddies in it.
Really?
And so it's fun to listen to him not quite Joker out in Full Throttle. It's real fun.
Nice. I'm surprised you went with Joker rather than Luke Skywalker.
Well, I mean, Luke Skywalker's great and all, but nothing sinister like the Joker from the animated series.
That's fair.
I wish I could do that laugh. Then 1996, the release of Warcraft 2 for the PC. Lovely times, recollections, playing with friends on multiplayer maps, hosting that kind of stuff locally, and playing like 3-on-1 against a significantly more powerful computer opponent, or playing all these sorts of special maps. Great time. But Mr. Nice Guy, I want to take us into your element a little bit with a release in 1999 for the Nintendo 64 Super Smash Brothers.
Okay, fantastic game.
And I have a question for you. I think we can all agree, a fantastic brawler, a great time to be had with friends, but I'm curious about your favorite character to use, and your least favorite character to be pitted against from the roster.
Ooh, that's a good question. So my favorite character, definitely Link.
Link, okay.
Definitely cool. Link. Yeah, but I would say Melee is my favorite game. But even in the old N64, okay, I loved Link. And at the time, it was just spamming that up B where he would spin the sword and he'd make people fly off the screen. But over time, I've realized he's just a great all-around character. Lots of parries, lots of ways to rack up damage quickly, just fantastic. Least favorite character to go up against? That's tough. I don't like that Kirby could just turn into other people. So I would
get those other move sets.
Yeah, other move sets. I would say Kirby. Like a really good Kirby player can do some damage. So that's what I'd go with.
For me personally, I also really loved playing Link whenever possible. I would use Link. Just the right amount of usability for a low tier trash player like myself. And I recognize that a top tier like you can make him do amazing things, but I could always stay in the game just long enough to feel like I was going somewhere. But I always, and maybe it's ridiculous, maybe I just kept playing against people who were good with it, but somehow, some way, I would always get destroyed by whoever took Ness for the for Smash Bros. I was always getting destroyed by Ness. So whether or not he is good or particularly well balanced against against Link, I just know that I would always get trashed. So he's my least favorite to go up against in Super Smash 64.
That's fair.
But yeah, some great titles that we had the pleasure of adding to our roster this last week in years before. Of all of them, I would play them any day of the week, especially if I got a chance to play them with you.
Dude, we'll have to do it next time you're out here. And I didn't know custard was such a big thing for you, because I don't think we got custard while you were out here. Going back to our earlier conversation.
We got, like, cake shakes, if I recall properly.
Where did we go? Did we go to Portillo's?
We did go to Portillo's, yeah.
Okay, yeah, dude, there's so much custard out here. Next time you're here.
Okay, awesome. I wish I could say the same about out here. There's nowhere near as much. There's, like, I don't think there's a single custard place.
Dude,
we're
getting off topic, but I still want to come out there for a weekend. Like,
oh, absolutely.
You know, at this point.
We'll plan to do 1 to 3 things a day.
That's perfect, dude. So, next segment, our topic of the week.
Woo-woo!
A segment where we talk about something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it. I'm excited, Mac, because this is something that I think is going to be right up your alley. This is something you're going to have way more opinions on than I do. And I'm excited to hear your thoughts as a fan of Valve. This is on IGN.com, written by Wesley Yin Poole. Wesley writes, Valve has confirmed the Steam controller price and release date, while promising to announce news on the hotly anticipated Steam machine soon. Steam controller launches on May 4th, priced at $99. Mac, did you already know this, or is this news to you?
This is news to me.
Okay. We also have regional pricing. I won't go through all of it, but $99 US. In a note to IGN, Valve said, quote, pricing varies by region due to distribution costs, import duties and tariffs, and market conditions. Here's the official information on the Steam controller direct from Valve. Steam controller highlights, high-performance ergonomic controller, next-generation magnetic thumbsticks with TMR technology. That makes me think that it's those thumbsticks, Mac, that don't get stick drift, which I think would be fantastic.
Yeah, what do they call them? Hall effect?
Yeah, Hall effect joysticks. Full-sized controls, track pads, grip buttons, grip-enabled gyro, referred to as grip sense. Comes with a cool puck. Puck serves as a wireless transmitter for a fast, stable connection. And it's also a charging station. Clicks in magnetically to your controller. Mac, here's something I thought was super cool. Battery life capable of supporting 35 plus hours of gameplay. Steam controller will be available in all the following regions. US, Canada, UK, EU, AU, as well as Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. May 4th, 2026 at 10 a.m. Pacific. I don't know that we really need to go too much more into this. My thoughts are... I just want to hear your thoughts. Let's start there.
Okay. Well, you know me, Mr. Nice Guy. I have mostly game on my PC.
You do?
Which generally means mouse and keyboard.
Correct.
I do have a basic Xbox-style controller that is a third party that I use for those times when I need a controller. And then, of course, you know, I've got my Steam Deck that that I use as well for controlling things. So I've gotten a little bit used to those sort of track pads that the Steam Deck has. However, in a strange twist, Nice Guy, even though I don't personally play on console, believe it or not, in the Discord for BitKid Games, that's the folks who put out Chasm and who have the new game that IGN recently did a story on, so I can talk about it now, Wolfhound, that is forthcoming There is one particular person in that Discord who's always bragging about having every single, are they called like DualSense, the controllers for the PS5?
Yeah, they are DualSense.
Bragging about having every DualSense controller ever released. He talks an awful lot about how much they cost, and you'll forgive me, and maybe these are because they are limited editions, but it sounds like $99 for this Steam controller, while more than I would normally pay for a controller, doesn't sound like it's that out of whack based on the features as compared to what people are paying for controllers. Am I way off base?
I think that it is absolutely a steal.
Okay.
I have the DualSense Edge for context.
Okay, give me
context. It's effectively the PlayStation Pro controller.
Okay, sweet. A pro controller for the pro. Yes.
Yes. Comes with back paddles that are replaceable and has a second set of back paddles.
Never in my life have I back paddled. Not when the Rapids were coming up or anything.
Well, you have a Steam Deck, so you have back paddles on there, right?
I guess I'm going to have buttons. To use them.
But anyway, point being, it's the elite version. Like, you can change it, Mac,
yeah,
so that the triggers come down less. Mm-hmm. And are more sensitive, so that when you're shooting, you don't have to pull them as far in a game like Call of Duty. So it's a legit, and it costs $200. Now, I got it on sale, hashtag baller on a budget. But yeah, for context, Steam controller may even have more features.
Okay. So if I'm understanding you properly, these features sound pretty comparable to what you're getting in the pro versions and is half the price.
That's fair. That is fair.
Now, there is one thing that I'm always worried about, and I know this is going back ages, but I remember everybody used to be all about Beats headphones. They were like, oh man, the Beats are the best or the whatever, and I never thought they were that much better, but like, I noticed that they would put weights inside of the Beats headphones to make them weightier, heavier, to make it kind of feel more premium. The interesting thing is that I wonder how the controller feels. Hopefully it feels light, because we want the exact opposite of weight for, you know, for like long play sessions.
For that 35 hour battery life.
See how it feels. Yeah, but for that 35, definitely. I might buy a Steam controller.
Yeah, and so that's my question.
And
for
can
you.
I
go ahead?
And
go
I
ahead.
Mean, if I can buy it on Steam, like the same way that I can buy, or that I bought rather, my Steam Deck, if I can just use my Steam wallet for it, that's. I mean, I've got some cash sitting in there. Not a lot, but like, you know, a few bucks take the edge off.
Yeah, and you get Steam points probably for doing it, right?
Probably.
So here's my thing. I kind of want this. I have to admit, part of the reason that I want it is FOMO.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that the old Steam controller went by the wayside. They no longer make it.
Yeah.
It was discontinued. And so if you have one now, it's a collector's item. It's also a cool controller.
Yeah.
And I remember they were on sale for like $5 as they were going out of stock. And I thought, you know what? I'm never going to use that. And I didn't buy one. And I wish that I had. I think it's great they're bringing this back. But more importantly, Mac, I'm excited to see what functionality it may have with the Steam PC when it comes out. Because I can't help but think that there's going to be some level of integration.
I think you're absolutely right, dude. Like, if we've learned anything, it's that they will absolutely drop a game that's specifically made to take advantage of the special features. Like, the Steam Deck has something that I seem to recall it was more of a demo than a game, but in that Portal, whatever it was, I'm forgetting, it's like a Aperture Science orientation thing. That you could do a thing by just resting your thumbs on the joystick was one of the, like, special input methods that they had.
Yep.
Just capacitively sensing your fingers on the joystick. So that was very interesting. I think you're right on the money, dude. They are 100% going to have something that goes on launch that takes special advantage of those controls.
So it's interesting, and I'll end with this. I feel like Valve as a company, and I haven't looked at the chat in a second. I don't know if there's comments in the chat on this topic.
Well, Galvatron's just saying you should shoplift it instead of paying for it.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for the tip. It's not $99. It's free. Valve has done so much over the years to create goodwill with its consumers. Yeah. They have the Steam sale. Something gets not what it used to be. Whatever. It's great that they have these store-wide sales so frequently. I remember my Index, my VR headset broke. One of the base stations broke, and it was out of warranty, and they still sent me another one. And then I'm an idiot, so I had my old address on there, and they still sent me another one, right? I dropped my Steam Deck, and they fixed it for me. And so I have a certain amount of loyalty to Valve when it comes to purchasing hardware, when it comes to buying things there. In fact, Mac, if I was to go to this webpage, istthereanydeal.com, which is a website that has PC deals on games. If there's ever a game you want, go to that website. You can find the cheapest version of it across all platforms. And there's often versions that are not on Steam that I could purchase and then use on Steam. A lot of times, I'll spend the extra few dollars and get it on Steam just because they have been so good to me. The fact that they're now pricing this controller at $99 at a time when hardware costs are going up is so impressive to me. When other controllers that are basic cost $70, $80, they're charging $100 for something that is premium. What a company. What a company.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts. Anything else you want to say before we move on?
Couldn't have said it better, my dude. 100% agree.
That has been our topic of the week.
All right, well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart. And I am deviating ever so slightly from the usual to go on my quarterly rant about Wormwood and their misuse. Yes, Wormwood has made an enemy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, okay, look, it's becoming kind of a tradition, but the way that Wormwood uses Kickstarter is they'll post up a thing, a concept, a whatever, something that looks awesome. In this case, it's a modular gaming desk. Now, a gaming desk that can lift, go up and down, you know, has a lot of cool features, and the modularity is mostly like, you know, the little accessories that you can add, some of which make use of the magnetic rails on the side. And of course, all this stuff is being made in wood, slick looking wood for sure.
Yeah.
But they want you to put down your deposit, which is going to be $200. One reward tier, $200, so that you can then pay on the far end between $2,700 and $4,000.
Wow.
Or somewhere in there. When you actually put together the desk with all the modular features that you're looking for. Each add-on that you'll choose, such as the schnazzy-looking cup holders or the modular shelving units, these things cost anywhere between $65 and $300, maybe more. They don't even list how much it is for those modular shelves in the thing. And then, and featured somewhat prominently in the promotional image and in that slick video, obviously, is like this leaning table, this table that like leans up sort of in the style of a drafting table, right? And that's an extra $1,000. So real quick, just I want to just throw out there what's presented in the imagery and what I can tell you about how much that one would cost. If you wanted the exact one, and they'll say something like, the desk starts at, you know, at $1,900, and of course your $200 deposit will come off that. This is the way they operate. But clearly in the promo, you know, the XL version is what they're using, so that's $2,250. The extension add-on, an extra $1,000. I see they've got the workstation bundle, which is another $450. The chair that they've got there, which I couldn't find a price on, but I'm assuming because their bog standard kitchen chairs cost $350, let's assume $500. $200 for shipping in the US, $50 for shipping on the chair, and probably another $50 for shipping the table extension. The desk depicted, without any of the fancy add-ons, comes to $4,500, assuming you get nothing else, which is always kind of the thing, and like, I mean, I'm all about paying for a premium product, but I always feel like they're being a little bit disingenuous every time they come to Kickstarter. And I'm gonna get a little bit more skeptical. I will give them some credit, though, because this time I do see a fulfillment timeline in their Kickstarter that they say something like, hey, the first 100 backers are going to get there. You know, it's a first in, first out. We're going to get your things out in August-ish. The first 1,000 are going to be out by January 2027. Yep. The first 3,000 by the end of quarter 2, 2027. I am skeptical about that. But yeah, at this moment, right, though, and the thing I'm real skeptical about, Nice Guy, is that at this moment, there are two completed Kickstarters from last year that are in fulfillment, as it listed, and two from this year that are ended. And I wanted to share a quotation from one of their fulfillment updates. Quote, Kickstarter projects, and this is a fulfillment update on one of the ones that the Kickstarters that's closed, but not yet in fulfillment and not yet totally shipped out.
Shipped out, for sure.
So, quote, Kickstarter projects have several distinct phases. The first phase of these is the campaign, which begins with launch and ends with order finalization. That's when you go and you, like, order how you want your desk laid out and such.
Sure, and pay your shipping and all that. Yeah.
And put it all. Now, the final phase is fulfillment, where the rewards are released and shipped out to everyone. In between is the period of design, development, and production, which mostly happens behind the scenes. In terms of development and production news, last month we got our metal CNCs up and running, cutting our own parts for the lifting mechanisms for in-house. Using these, we created a new prototype. While we iterate the design and prototype, we're still in super small-scale production. However, once we confirm that this design is final, we'll scale up the process for continued productions. And I'll just end the quote there. So, in one of the fulfillment updates that they put out for one of the Kickstarters that's going on, that has already closed, where they've taken people's deposit money as well as the additional money that they did for choosing out their thing, they're like, hey, we are still designing the prototype of the stuff that we put out. And
unacceptable.
I agree, because I feel like what they're really putting out every time, what I feel like Wormwood is putting out there is like, this is what you will get. We want you to have a product. It's just a question of, we just have to make it. But I feel like that really betrays that for a lot of these things, they are still figuring out how to produce the things they're promising. And I have said it kind of feels a little bit, you know, if not pyramid scheme, why pyramid shaped? You know? And that's just...
yep.
I mean, yeah. So anyway, you know my general feelings about it, but like, you know, I feel like Kickstarter was meant to be there to support the small creator, and you know, I don't want to see CD Projekt Red showing up in Kickstarter. I don't want to see Wormwood on Kickstarter. That's just it feels, everything about it just feels like it's not the right headed thing. And I Nice Guy, I, you know, sorry, I just kept on rambling on this, but like, you know, I don't know if you want to put them on blast for anything.
The only thing that frustrates me is I didn't realize that they were serial Kickstarters. I looked at their profile before you even said that. And yeah, 36 created. April or March is when the last one was done for the little chess set that they came out with. It's $300 for a wooden chess set, right? It's absurd, the things that people will pay for, but also the level of the audacity that people have to take advantage of people. Now, granted, it's a consumer environment. If people will pay for it, you know, who am I to say no? But it's interesting that every single Kickstarter, at least the last recent ones, have a $10,000 starting point in terms of the amount that they want to raise. This one is for a pretty big product, a table with multiple modifications. It's only at $77,000 raised with 16 days left to go. This is the type of thing where you really want to raise a couple hundred thousand, if not $1 million, to justify you making mass amounts of this product. Mm-hmm. You don't want to sell 50 of them. You don't want to sell 100 or 200 of them. If you're going to take the time to make the schematics and you're legitimately cutting stuff out yourself, you want to sell enough that it's worth your time. So to me, there's a lot of things that about this that are very sketchy.
Yeah. I kick this thing, find some, find something else to put your money toward. But like, I really wish Wyrmwood would stop it with this.
Yeah. Best of luck, but maybe not even best of luck.
No.
Best of luck to those putting their money down.
That's right. We hope you get it.
Well, Mac, now it is time for a segment we like to call Nerd Flex.
Woo-hoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you do not. Mac, we have our test bank here, but for those that are here live, if you have a question, feel free to post it in the chat. Multiple choice, gaming related, and family friendly.
Mm-hmm.
As always. Mac, here's the first question from our randomly generated list of cards from the test bank. Which Pokemon is said to have created the universe? Which Pokemon is said to have created the universe? Where is Spinnus when we need him?
I know. Dude, I feel like, and I'm going to feel bad for this, but I feel like this was said of one of the, it was either said of Mew.
Yes.
Or it was said of, like, one of the legendary birds. And not, like, Articuno, Zapdos, Moltres, but, like, Ho-Oh from, like, Gold.
I was thinking Mew, because I remember in the Pokemon theme, you see Mew, like, going into the sky, like, almost off into the stars.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's either Mew or Mewtwo, but we can only pick one.
If one of those, it has to be Mew, because Mewtwo was created in the lab.
That's true. So Mew couldn't have created the universe and then been created. So yeah, why don't we go with Mew, final answer, and see what it says.
Well, we don't have to be on the same. So you go with Mew, I'll go with Ho-Oh, just to hedge the bets.
Well, let's see what the answer is. Ooh, it's actually Arceus.
Arceus. Oh.
Interesting.
Okay. Cool.
Well,
I think for people like us who haven't played Arceus, then I think we made good calls given the information we had.
I think you're exactly right.
Let me read the question from Galvatron. Who is the final boss in Golden Axe? Is it the Bad Brothers, Death Adder, Lieutenant Bitter, Zubakora, Mecha Death Adder, Death Bringer, or the two other unchosen playable characters?
I honestly don't know.
Golden Axe was not really one of mine, but I assume if you have Death Adder, then Mecha Death Adder comes next. I'm gonna say Mecha Death Adder is my guess.
And it's multiple choice, so we have to be on the same page. So
yeah,
let's go with it. I think that it's, I honestly don't think that it's either of those.
Yeah.
I think it's Zubakora, but let's go with Mecha Death Adder. I think the fact that there's two in there, I think your logic is in the right place.
Let's go with Zubakora.
Let's go with what you said.
Nope, too late. I already posted it in the chat. Nice guy.
Mac.
Unlike me, you have actually played Golden Axe, so I trust your instincts.
It's been a long time, dude. Definitely never got to the final boss.
Galvatron says it's Deathbringer, which seems a little on the nose, but either way, we did our best and still failed. The lesson here is never try.
We're 0 for 2 today, but hey, this next one, maybe we can get it. It's a Sega question.
Sega.
What Nintendo franchise has Nintendo published on a Sega console? I think I know the answer for this one.
What Nintendo franchise? Huh. No, that's Capcom that I'm thinking of.
Let's think of Nintendo franchises. Super Mario, Zelda,
yeah.
Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
I don't think it's any of those.
Yeah.
Like Star Fox. And keep in mind, Sega consoles, not really as relevant as they used to be. So probably an older Nintendo IP.
Huh. I mean, we're looking at Sega, or we're looking at Genesis, or really Dreamcast.
Was there a Zelda game on Sega? Or was that was the CD?
The Philips CDI. Yeah,
so
that wasn't Philips.
Sega. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh gosh, I'm struggling, dude. I can think of a bunch of like Capcom stuff.
A Sega console. So it's not multiple, but it's a Sega console. Now, Sega Genesis and SNES were going head-to-head pretty hard. I don't think Nintendo was giving anything up during that gen.
Definitely not. So I feel like, you know, I feel like it's gotta be during the Dreamcast era. But what? I mean, I can think of a couple of Castlevania games, but those are Konami.
Was Tetris ever on? And I don't know if that's really a Nintendo.
Oh, Tetris was on everything.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And I don't know if that's a Nintendo franchise.
I'm totally stumped.
All right. Well, I'm just going to throw it out there.
I'm going to guess Donkey Kong.
And you might be, well, I don't know. You're going to go Donkey Kong. I'm going to go, what are some other Nintendo franchises? Oh, I'm going to go Double Dragon. Does that count as a Nintendo franchise? I guess we'll find out.
Well, we will find out.
Oh, shoot. I accidentally just went to the next card. I'm going to have to Google it real quick. Hold on.
Okay.
I may have to go to ChatGPT. The question was, what Nintendo franchise has been on Sega? This is frustrating because it says several. This is not giving me the answer.
Gotcha.
Mac, how do you feel about me using AI to get the answer to this question as opposed to just Google?
I think the most important question is how do I feel about trusting the answer when I don't know where the information comes from? That's one thing that I do like about Google generally, is the idea that I can, you know, drill into a source, but which I feel like the AIs just really obfuscate generally. So not a general fan, but I mean, I'm not going to put you on blast for it. It's not your fault.
Dude, what comes up is the answer is Mario and Sonic.
Interesting.
And I don't know that that's the actual right answer. I wish I could go back to that other card and see what the answer is. But
Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games?
Probably, yeah.
Huh. I think the thing is the AI has probably misunderstood which direction of causality, because
exactly.
I don't think Mario and Sonic ever appeared on a Sega console. I think that's Sonic appearing, because like Mario and Sonic, I think that was a Wii.
So here's the thing that's so frustrating. It says Pokemon. When I Google it again, it says various Pokemon games were released on Sega's educational console, the Sega Pico.
Oh.
Including Pokemon Catch the Numbers in 2002, the Advanced Generation Pico, and for everyone, Pokemon Loud Battle in 2004. Later, Pokemon Korra Gorena was released in 2022. So maybe it's Pokemon. I'm frustrated that I can't go back to that card. But hey, that's been Nerdflex.
All right. Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
I'm not a lawyer, neither here nor internationally. What I have for you today, though, is a little something interesting happening here that deals with some international considerations. This is called Hoffert v. Nintendo, or the case of Gimme Back That Tariff Money. As we've had basically a little bit more than a year of time to learn, if you didn't remember from macroeconomics, when a government imposes a tariff, that is extra money you usually wind up paying your government, or the importing company pays to the government issuing the tariff, for items that are not made in the country but sold in the country. And whether that is tropical fruit or coffee beans that you literally cannot grow in your climate and have to import, or Nintendo Switches that are manufactured abroad. Now, because businesses generally are profit maximizing, they also tend to increase their prices by the amount of tariffs so that the full burden of taxation is shifted to the consumer. This is Econ 101. Tariffs are taxes on the domestic consumer, and were recently, in the US at least, shot down by the United States Supreme Court, ordering that all the extra money that was captured by the United States government by their taxation directly on the importing companies be paid back to the businesses. So enter Gregory Hoffert from Seattle and Prashant Saran in California, who on behalf of themselves and all others similarly situated, that's right folks, it's a class action, are suing Nintendo to get the extra money that Nintendo charged put hopefully back into the pockets of United States consumers. The short version is that this principle of how economics works, combined with Nintendo's own very public statements and shareholders' earning statements, clearly paint a picture, or at least they, I think they paint a pretty clear picture, that the from the earnings statements especially, that the plan from Nintendo was to take the tariff burden and shift that as higher prices that the customers would pay and not be a cost on the company. So while this is obviously interesting, this is the beginning of the road. And if we even wind up getting through to the discovery process, which we're not 100% sure if we will, as you know, forced arbitrations, that's in almost everything that you sign. But I will be very interested to see the analysis on the far end as to just how much of that burden of tariff was shifted to the consumer, and like what the kind of internal conversations, because we do have those very public earnings statements where they said, we aren't paying, you know, because of course they want to be like, hey, this won't impact the business so that stock price stays high. This won't impact our profits.
Sure.
Because we're going to shift that onto the people who are buying the consoles when for those Nintendo's Switch that we wind up selling. Nintendo Switches? No, Nintendo's Switch. I like that better.
No, it's Nintendo Switches.
Is it Switches? Okay, yeah. Fine. We'll go with that. But I will be very interested to see how that falls with the analysis, where that goes, and then how much you wind up getting back if you're somebody who purchased during this time frame. So once again, Hoffert v. Nintendo. I'll keep you updated as new developments happen, and maybe, Mr. Nice Guy, some of y'all might get some of your money back from Nintendo. We will see.
We want our money back. We want our money back.
Want our money back. Hashtag ballers on budgets.
Ballers
so,
on budgets.
It's not the law, but it is legally.
That's right. Mac, thank you for sharing that, man. And on that note, that's been our show, y'all. Thank you for tuning in. But before we go, we have one last segment where we talk about what we've been watching and what we've been playing, which is just based on that.
Yeah.
Mac, it's what we've been watching and what we've been playing. And if you have some stuff you've been playing, I want to hear about it. If chat has stuff they've been playing, I want to hear about it. And I'm going to share the stuff I've been playing because we're always looking for cool, nerdy stuff to get into. Mac, what have you been watching and playing, sir?
Well, I've spent a lot of my weekend entertaining and trying not to play that many video games. My folks don't exactly play games, although I keep trying to occasionally get them drawn into one. Haven't succeeded quite yet. But I did play a game called Creeper World IXE, mostly before they rolled up. And it's another one in this sort of Creeper World kind of tower defense-y type game. It's a little bit different. I'm playing through some of the... I beat the main story, and I'm playing through some of the side stuff, and I'm still a little bit on the fence as to whether or not I think it's an improvement over the previous game or not.
Okay.
So, anyway, but we'll see. As for watching, though, watched some good stuff when my folks were around. There's a great movie called Hunt for the Wilder People, starring Sam Neill, you know, of Jurassic Park fame, directed by Taika Waititi, directed and written by Taika Waititi.
Nice.
And it's good stuff. It's like I think it's a 2014 film, so it's a little older. Also rewatched Knives Out 3, Wake Up Dead Man.
Dude, I haven't seen the third one yet.
Oh, dude, oh man, I love Wake Up Dead Man. I would be willing to do a watch party of
That'd
Wake Up
fun.
Dead Man.
That'd be fun. It's on Netflix, right? Or it's on
it is
Prime?
On Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Okay, nice.
Yeah. So anyway, totally recommend. It's good stuff. But yeah, that's pretty much it for me. What about you, dude?
What have I been watching and playing, Mac? Well, watch the Mariners play. Watch Ron Funches perform.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I also have been watching Billions. I really like that show. Been watching some of that. As far as other stuff, my kids just have been begging me to check out Young Sheldon, which I've never been into the parent show, which is, I can't even remember the name right now.
Big Bang Theory.
I watched like a couple episodes in college. Not really my thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, watched some Young Sheldon with the family. And as far as playing, still really, really into Slay the Spire, Mac. That nice. Game is my jam. And there's a game that just came out, and I should have looked up the name, in April game releases. And it's a game that, Mac, I think you would like. And it's a game that I am excited to pick up. Let me just look up April game releases, because it reminds me of Deadlight. And it looks so, so good. I'm not going to find the game right now. Yes, I am. Give me 2 seconds. I'm scrolling through the April game releases. It's not that one. It's not that one. Oh. Anyway, side-scrolling game, 2.5D. It is on Steam. And that game that I was thinking of is called Replaced.
Replaced.
And Mac, you're going to watch videos of it and be like, yep, this looks pretty sick. It looks almost like Deadlight and Katana Zero had a baby. It looks so good. And it's on Game Pass. So I may actually just get a month of Game Pass rather than buying the game and check it out.
Okay. Cool, cool.
Mac, why don't you take us home, my friend?
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for coming out to the show, for being a part of episode 376. And remember, if you are listening to this after the fact, you are always welcome to join us here at twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod with the number 2, of course, on most Mondays. And you, yes, you can stump Mr. Nice Guy with your nerdy trivia. But until we see you then, remember to be excellent to each other. And keep it nerdy, everybody. Bye.
Deuces.